When you dance, be sure to hold her tight. When you dance, you'll squeeze her, yeah, with all your might. Such a thrill.
Good morning. You're listening to The Garden Line on News Radio 92.3. I'm Jenna Barb. Mike Wiggins is here in the house. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Fantabulous.
Good for you.
It's a beautiful start to the day. It's starting to feel a little muggy, though.
Yes, yes. We're moving into
muggy season.
Summer. There's no doubt about it, which, as you know from prior conversations, I like it.
You love it.
I'm a summertime person. I really enjoy it. Don't
nice
like the cold
steam
weather.
Every day.
Exactly. I can jump in the Gulf of Mexico and cool off if it gets too hot.
Yeah. Now is your time to do that. It's still pretty chilly out there in the Gulf of Mexico.
I'm kind of an 80-degree guy.
Oh, wait for it to be like a bath.
Well,
okay.
I don't know. It's just, I think it's around 71, 72 right now. That's a little chilly.
I know people who have their heated pools.
Yeah.
And, right, so they can turn it on in the winter.
Yes.
They have it at like 95.
Really?
Why would you do that?
That's a little high. That is like bath like, water.
I know. I just exactly. go into the tub. Hey, if you'd like to ask Mike a question this morning, have something going on, or would like to send in a picture, 850-437-1620 is the number to text. Or feel free to call. We got very busy last Garden Line. So get those questions in ASAP.
Right. One thing. I went to the bank the other day, and the teller, who is just one of the nicest people one would ever want to meet, said, Mike, I've been watering my yard just like you have told us. And it's really coming back. It's doing well. The weather's heating up. But she says, after the rain that we had, that real hard rain, she said that grass greened up and just looked fabulous because of the rain. She says, I'm watering it, and that's doing good, but there's nothing like rain to really get that lawn going. And I agree with her. I am not sure, maybe some of our listeners are, what the difference is insofar as the rainwater and in the water we apply with our sprinkler systems. But I will tell you right now, it makes a difference. And I really think some of these afternoon, I call them thunderstorms, what do we have, are really good for us. They're good for our plants. They're good for our lawn. And I'm glad to see them. I really am. And especially when they happen late in the afternoon. So if you've been to the beach, or you're playing golf, you're riding your bike, doing your jogging, whatever is going on, you have all that done. And then you enjoy those late afternoon thunderstorms.
It forces you to slow down.
I didn't think of it that way, but I think you're right.
Oh, yeah. Because Sunday, the monsoon that hit us, and lightning and thunder, as soon as I saw that, I was like, well, we can't be outside.
Nope.
Can't take baths. Can't, you know, do all this. So it's time to just all cuddle up and watch a movie.
Exactly. And let the rain come down. And
it was
Get that grass to grow. It's really good.
Yeah, exactly.
No doubt about it. One thing, just a couple of things about time of year. Don't forget that this is an okay time to fertilize the lawn. No weed and feed. Don't want to do that. But you get out your old 1608, 1648, 15015, some of those type of fertilizers, it is not too late to do that if you haven't done it. Now, of course, if you have St. Augustine and you've already done it, you're going to want to repeat that application probably late June, maybe early July. Centipede, if you've already done it, you're in pretty good shape. You probably don't have to do anything unless that centipede gets a little light green and you need to put a little iron on it. And if that's the case, your midsummer application for centipede is that product that I like. I like Ironite. Ironite comes in a bag just like fertilizer. You put it out just like fertilizer, but it'll really help that centipede. You don't need to put that 1608 or 15015 back on your centipede midsummer. That's too much fertilizer. They don't really like that. But for St. Augustine, yes. Centipede, no, unless you want to go ahead and put some iron on it. So just want to say, from a timing situation, if you haven't fertilized yet, it's good. Good timing right now. No question about it.
Now is the time
now
to fertilize.
Is the time. And Jenna, just one other thing. It's also, before we get into the 90s, we're right on the bubble insofar as putting on weed killer on our lawn. And I got some interesting article from Daniel Leonard. Remember Daniel Leonard? He's a extension agent over in Calhoun County. He sends me all this stuff, and it's really kind of cool. He said, the big question right now is, what is this particular weed that I have, and what do I do about it? He said there are four things that you need to stock in your toolbox, if you will, to take care of the weeds. And that's all you need insofar as post-emergence weed killers, in other words, those that kill weeds that are already there. And the first one is one that, and we can talk about these as the show goes on, but the first one is one that I always recommend to be so careful about. Do your research. Be sure it's a product for you. And that, of course, is glyphosate. And glyphosate, of course, is Roundup. That is, if you've got weeds in a flower bed, weeds in an area that has no turf, and you spray the glyphosate on that, then it's going to kill it all. But it's not going to sterilize the soil. You can put it right next to good plants. You just can't get it on good plants. But let me give one word of caution, Jenna. This is really important. I looked the other day at the Roundup selection in a particular garden center, and it's confusing. Roundup now makes a product that goes on lawns that is not this glyphosate. It's not what kills everything. So be so careful you don't get them mixed up.
Okay, really read.
Really, that's right.
Read that print
read
there.
Read the label. One kills everything. One is selective. You've got to be sure you're buying the right product.
You don't want to kill everything.
That's exactly right.
850-437-1620. Some texts coming in. Going to get to those. Let's first go to Joseph from Pensacola. Joseph, what's your question for Mike this morning?
Hey, Mike. I've got two, if you don't mind. First, we had two loropetalums that wasn't fitting with our landscape, so we gave them to our neighbors. We transplanted them over there, and ever since we did, they don't seem to be very happy. They put landscape fabric over it, black landscape fabric over it, and then rocks. I mean, could that be kind of suffocating them, or is it something else? What do you think?
Well, you know what I have found? I really like loropetalum, which, of course, I love the red color, but I did the same thing you did. I had loropetalum. It just grew too big, and they grow so fast. They really are fast-growing plants. I have found that particular plant, and there are others, is not that easy to transplant. I, quite frankly, don't believe it's the landscape fabric you put down, unless it's plastic and it's keeping the water from getting to the roots. I think it's probably just plant shock. What I would do on the loropetalum, if you have done that and they're looking a little rough, I'd prune them back. I'd come back at least a third on them, and don't count on the sprinkler system from watering them. Put that hose right next to that trunk and let it just dribble on it for maybe an hour or so, a couple times a week. We'll really get that water down. But I would cut them back and be sure you're getting water. I don't think the rocks had anything to do with it. That's fine. That gives good drainage. I'm not a big landscape fabric guy because long-term, many of our weeds, like Bermuda grass, for example, will come back through it, and it can be a mess. I just simply think that the rocks would have been good enough. But just be sure whatever landscape fabric you use is allowing that water to get through. But I think bottom line is we're dealing with transplant shock in this situation. That'd be my best guess.
Okay. All right. And then I don't know what it is, but it's a pain in the butt. It's purple, thorny, crawly weed. What is that, and how do you get rid of it?
Well, it sounds a little bit like, and I'm not seeing it, and it's some type of thistle. I would use a post-emergent. As a matter of fact, we were going to talk about that before the show's over. That's the second weed product that you need. If it's by itself, and it's not in the lawn, if it's just in an area where you can spray by itself, Roundup is perfect. It'll get it, no question. If not, then your basic post-emergence lawn weed killers that contain 2,4-D or contain Trimec, if you will, are really good for that. Read the label. Be sure it is for the grass that you have, and spray the weed, and it shouldn't damage the grass, but should kill that particular weed. But like I say, you got to be so careful on that label insofar as spraying. If you're spraying that particular weed in your lawn, if it's in a bare area, Roundup will get it.
Yeah, it's in the lawn and amongst bushes. So.
Sure. Well, if it's among bushes, that might be different. If you could isolate the weed, in other words, spray with your sprayer with a nozzle that gets right to the weed, and you won't get any glyphosate, which is Roundup, on your good shrubbery, that's your best thing to do. What some people do is, I've seen people get a piece of cardboard and kind of put it right in front of the desirable plant and to isolate it from the weed, and just spray the weed so that the weed killer doesn't get on the desirable plant. And that should solve your problem.
Hey, Joseph, thank you so much for calling. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have Nancy from Pensacola on the line. She's got a question for Mike here on the Garden Line. You're listening to News Radio 92.3. Man, we are getting busy here on the Garden Line on News Radio 92.3. All right, Mike, so let's get on over to Nancy from Pensacola. Nancy, what's your question for Mike?
Nancy, good morning.
Good morning. I sent a text with a picture of my gardenias. I don't know if you got it or not, but it's black mold on the top of the leaf, and then underneath there's little specks. I don't know what that is. And on the flower, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
On the flower, there's little tiny, tiny little black bugs.
Right.
Crawling around.
Exactly. Let me tell you what's going on. And gardenias are very bad about this. They get scale. On the back of that leaf, the little white spots are literally insects that are piercing that leaf and sucking the juice out of the leaf, if you will. Leaving what the residue from all of that is a honeydew, which on the top of the leaf turns black. And that's that's the black sooty mold caused by the scale. The best thing in the world to use for that is ultra fine oil. Great product, very organic. It's not toxic at all. Spray your gardenias, spray your ligustrums, spray sago palms. Get it very, very bad. Anything else that might have scale, spray it. And I would do it right now. I'll do it right now. And be sure what you've got to do, Nancy, you've got to get underneath that leaf to get with that scale, because what that oil does, it smothers that scale. And then they're in the plant. Now, depending on how bad it is, whether it's going to absolutely solve the problem forever, hard to say. But I would certainly give it a try, no question about it. Use ultra-fine oil, and I really believe that will help your problem.
And that's okay to spray it while it's blooming?
Well, that's another problem. That's a great point. If you've got problems there that could easily, they could easily kill that plant. That scale can get so bad, and that black sooty mold. Mm-hmm. Because what the black sooty mold does, of course, it covers the leaf, and so the leaf gets no sunlight, and so the plant just disintegrates, if you will. I think to save the plant, you might want to go ahead and give it a try. And you can be selective. Okay. Just be sure, get your sprayer nozzle and get underneath that leaf and soak it underneath that leaf.
Right.
And maybe you can salvage some of the blossoms. But I think to save that plant, I think that's what you've got to do.
Okay. And are those little tiny black bugs, are they related to that?
Well, probably not. It sounds like, a lot of times when a plant gets traumatized, you're going to get other insects. What you might do is, if you want to stay safe, is get some insecticidal soap. You can get it in a little spritzer bottle, and you can just spray the little black bugs that you've got there, and that should help that. But that oil is what you really need at this point.
Okay, thank you so much.
Oh, Nancy, thank you for calling us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Nancy. And I just saw that picture, so I'll make sure Mike double checks it. We're going to take another quick break here in just a moment, but when we come back, here's something to mull over. My zucchini has white spots in its wilting, and my tomatoes are not turning red, but they're loaded. what do I need to do? That's from our friend Carolyn. So, Carolyn, Mike, that's something for you to think about.
That's a tough one.
And then also, good morning to our friend Catherine.
Right.
She said the Gulf temperature right now is 78.
No kidding.
That's a perfect temperature.
Two more degrees,
actually.
And I'm ready. I may head over there tomorrow.
Listen, you're being a little high maintenance, Mike, okay?
I understand. Oh, Catherine, you saved the day. Thank you.
Catherine, that sounds perfect. Might have to take a dip after the garden line. Stay tuned. We're going to answer Carolyn's question when we come back.
Finding a landscaper that will actually call you back? Check. Finding one that offers high-end designs complemented with 3D walkthrough designs and 2D renderings? Check. Finding a great landscaper that can also execute beautiful landscape and hardscape designs? Check. Finding one that knows how to erect outdoor pergolas, fences, patios, and kitchens? Check. Finding the right landscaper that also offers irrigation services? Check.
Hi, this is Paul with Blue Sky Landscapes. Call us today for a free quote and check out our work at blueskypensacola.com.
You're listening to The Garden Line on News Radio 92.3. I'm Jenna Barr. Mike Wiggins is here to answer your questions on The Garden Line. So what do you think, Mike? We had our friend Carolyn text in. Zucchini has white spots. It's wilting. Tomatoes are busting, but they're only green.
Right.
What do you think?
Right. A couple of things. One, let's be sure that all of this is planted in full sun. And I'm quite sure that it probably is. Otherwise, I would go with some insecticide to cover any insects that may be causing these problems. There's some good ones. 5% 7 dust, an old remedy, which is relatively safe, no question. And that's what I would do. Get a 5-pound bag of it. It's just a dust, and dust the plants with it. Also, on the tomatoes, of course, a good low-nitrogen fertilizer might help you, like a 4-12-12, or just a good vegetable fertilizer that has all the minor elements. That's another good thing. One other thing that we've never talked about on this show is nematodes. Nematodes. Nematodes are microscopic worms that sometimes will affect the roots of vegetable plants. There's not much one can do it in our soil. And that's why when you plant tomato plants, we always like to plant with that three initials after it, VFN. The N, the V and the F are disease inhibitors. The N is a nematode resistor. So that's what you need to, when you plant your tomato plants, do that. But I would go back to the beginning and check the sun. I think we need to look at that first.
Okay, excellent. A nematode sounds like a really angry frog, Mike.
Oh, it's nasty. It's nasty. It really is.
How lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head?
I was doing high kicks. I wasn't trying to kick you in the head.
Pretty good. Kind of looked like the Rockettes were
I was feeling it today. Hey, you're listening to The Garden Line on the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Jenna Barr. Mike Wiggins is here to answer your questions. We were talking about Carolyn's vegetables, and I just remembered I have a friend who sprays white vinegar in a bottle. She keeps it in like one of those brown glass bottles.
Right.
Keeps it a little bit cooler. You don't want it to get hot. You don't want to spray your vegetable garden or your fruits with hot anything. You want to make sure that it's less than room temperature, right?
Absolutely.
So she actually, and I know she's listening, she sprays her garden with like cooler white vinegar. Distilled white vinegar, and that's how she kind of keeps all the buggy bugs and mold off. And so it's safer than poison.
You can research a lot of those natural, old-fashioned cures, if you will, and quite frankly, I think a lot of them work. There's no question about it. I think that's a great idea. I really do. So I think vinegar, maybe so, but maybe that should be your first try, and then go into some of your other chemicals. But one other thing, I think you said it a minute ago. If you're going to water your vegetables, I have this problem too. if you have a nozzle on your hose that you just never turn the water off, it's just, you just use a nozzle, the water in that hose is so boiling hot.
Oh, it'll burn you.
So you have got to run that water out of that hose before you go and spray your tomato plants, your zucchini, and other things. It'll wilt a tomato. There's no question about it.
And I don't like to waste water, so what I try to do, and it'll dry up instantly, is just hose off the patio.
Right.
Hose off the driveway or the car, you know, like something like that. I hate to waste water, but yeah, you have to let it run for about a minute or so to get that super hot water out. It does not feel good on your toes.
One other quick thing, going back to our favorite new insect, the nematode. The nematodes are kind of microscopic, in many cases, worms that attack the roots of plants. Nematodes are all over the world. They're in sandy soil. We've got them here. But you know, you're talking about natural remedies for problems.
Yeah.
Some people will plant, this is an old-fashioned way to do it, marigolds. If you've got tomato plants, plant a few marigolds around them, because some of the, I say old-timers, some of the people that have been doing this for a long time will say it could help with the nematode problem, because they will damage the roots and reduce the roots on many plants, and like that tomato plant we talked about wilting, it will make it wilt because you don't have the root system that you normally should have. And sometimes nematodes can do that. There's no chemical that I know that you can use. But marigolds are just a thought.
Excellent. Hey, remember Joseph called before talking about that thistle-like weed?
Yeah.
So yes. Somebody texted in and said it sounded like he was describing dewberry vines.
It could be.
Thank you for that.
Yes, absolutely.
Hey, how can I keep weeds out of a jasmine bed I'm trying to develop?
You know, that's interesting. It's very hard to do. For the most part, I tell people to do it manually. You're just going to have to in there and just weed it out. However, if it's some grassy weeds, there are some products on the market. As a matter of fact, remember we opened the show talking about Daniel Leonard sending us the four weed killers that he says put into your toolbox, if you will, to kill weeds. One of them is called an over-the-top spray. A lot of growers use it. You spray and it'll get the grassy weeds. It won't get the dollar weed. It won't get the Florida pusley, but it'll get some of your grassy weeds. Now, I have never found it to be that effective, to be honest with you, but that's what it's for. But before I used it, I would go find the owner, the manager of your garden center who sells that chemical, and get all the details from him to be sure that it's labeled for what the ornamental plant, like the jasmine, you're going to spray. And then the last thing what I would do, if you're going to use an over-the-top spray, is to experiment. Mix up just a little bit, do about 3 to 4 square feet, and see how it affects your plant before I just spray it all over the place. But that's number 4 on Daniel Leonard's list, was a, quote, over-the-top spray.
Okay, I like that.
Kind of interesting.
Hey, how do we handle transplant shock for sago palms?
Well, a couple of things, in my opinion. I do part company with some of the state people on this one. If you're going to transplant a sago palm, they really do have a deep root system. They really do. Get as much of the root system as you can. There's a product called Root Stimulator. It's a liquid that you can mix up, and when you plant the sago, you use that liquid in the hole in which you're planting the sago palm, and it kind of gets those roots started again. Also, I would be sure to use some Canadian sphagnum peat moss in the hole along with the sand that's there. So use your root stimulator and your peat moss to hold the moisture in to help reduce that shock. But if you can get a lot of the roots, and many times you can, then you should be okay.
All right. Hey, speaking of peat moss, remember last week our friend Johnny was talking about peat moss, couldn't find any. I said, call all over the place. It looks like it's in stock. Well, he texted in and let us know that all the stores have small bags of peat moss, but large 2 and 3 cubic foot bags, there are none to be found. So you have to call before you go. But Johnny has a follow-up question, not to do with peat moss, but what's the best way to transplant a mimosa tree that's 8 feet tall?
That's going to be very difficult. Mimosa trees are are very difficult. That's why you don't really find a lot of mimosa trees for sale, because they're hard to grow in a container, and they're hard to transplant. Same deal on that sago we had a minute ago. If you've got to do it, one, wait till the dead of winter to do it. Use your Canadian sphagnum peat moss, a little bit of the root stimulator, prune it back just a little bit when you transplant it, and cross your fingers, because that's a tough one to execute. It really is.
That's what I do every time I try to do gardening. I just cross my fingers.
Well, you know, and it works. It works. It's kind of a natural way to do it. You know, it's organic. You know, you just cross your fingers
and
go.
Exactly. Link, blink, bow. Try to I dream of genie yourself to a better place. Hey, what's the best weed killer, granular or liquid?
Oh, I think insofar as your post-emergence, in other words, killing weeds right now that are in your yard, I think the liquid is by far the best. I really do. I think the granular, I don't think is that effective. I think a liquid, if you know, we always preach this sermon, and I'll say it again, read the label, be sure it's the right one for you. Do your arithmetic and know how many square feet you have and how many tablespoons per gallon, how many gallons per square foot. Do all of that on your liquid spray. Do not spray it when it's going to rain, because this is a contact killer, and it just, you're going to kind of waste your money if it looks like it's going to rain. Give it at least, if you can, Pensacola, it's hard to do, 48 hours before you water it.
Okay.
That's a good way to do it. Back earlier in the spring when we were doing the pre-emergence, remember that? Spraying atrazine for pre, we watered that in because you wanted to get down into the roots. But now you've got a dollar weed, you want that weed killer to sit on that dollar weed for a day or two to go to work.
So, all right.
Yes, but I like the liquid much better than the granular when it comes to weed killer. Yes.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, here is the question that we're going to get to. Our listener says that they have a commercial property with two heritage oaks, which we had to keep. It was recommended we fertilize them to make them healthier. Can you recommend a product we can use on them? So we're going to get to that question after this short break. You're listening to The Garden Line on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. All right, Mike, so we're talking heritage trees, the heritage oaks.
Heritage oaks.
What's the deal with fertilizing them?
Well, you know what, to be honest with you, a heritage oak, obviously, is a very, very old oak.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a huge caliper or diameter, whichever way you want to discuss it. And I think probably fertilizer is not that important to an oak tree. Now, if that oak tree is in your yard, mm-hmm. And you fertilize your lawn, and the lawn fertilizer got underneath the oak tree, that's all you need to do. If it's by itself, I'm not sure you really need to do anything, because obviously it's lived for years and years and years and years, and probably the fertilizer is not going to help that much. I don't think I would do anything other than the fertilizer that you put in your lawn just kind of do its thing. But I don't think it's that important, to be quite frank with you.
Okay. All right. We'll take your word for it.
Thank you very much.
Well, this is The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. I'm just Jenna Barr. I'm just managing back here. Hey, I have a 3-year-old orange tree who's got 10 little bitty oranges on it. However, I've got several leaves that have holes in them. I'm wondering what to do about these leaves with the holes.
Good question. Because once again, we're in the topic of spraying trees on, you know, that's growing oranges, for example, or any plant that we're going to eat the produce from. I think you got to be careful. There's some natural products. If those holes are made by worms, a great product around is called Bacillus thuringiensis. You buy it on the shelf, called BT. It's an easy way to remember it. BT, which is a dust you can put on the tree, put on where the holes are, which will take care of any worms that are eating the holes, but it's very, very safe. So that's an option there if that's what we're dealing with, and I think it is.
Okay, excellent. 850-437-1620. Let's see. The county made them keep the heritage oak trees.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. Yeah.
Let me see. All right, you're going to have to help me with this word. All right, glyphosate. Did I get it right?
Glyphosate.
Oh, my goodness.
That's Roundup.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm. That's what Roundup is. It's glyphosate.
The fancy, is that like the Greek word?
Yeah, that's the active ingredient. The Greek glyphosate. You might want to Google that to see exactly what that means.
Okay. So it is actually, somebody was saying to, they want to avoid this and they want to stop recommending it because it's been linked to cancers and pollutes our groundwater.
Well, I think that is an excellent comment from a texter, and I appreciate that. I have always said, especially here on the Garden Line, when we talk about glyphosate or Roundup, that you need to do your personal research. It's still on the shelves. I think it's still approved by the government and all of that. However, due to some of the literature and some of the lawsuits, quite frankly, out there about glyphosate, I think everybody and anybody who uses it needs to do their personal research. The internet is full of it. So if you want to get the information on glyphosate, do that. On the Garden Line, we're dealing right here with the Extension Service is saying to use it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a personal choice.
Right.
And I think if you are going to use it, every precaution, you should follow every precaution.
Yeah.
Gloves, long sleeve shirt, long pants. Get a pair of shoes. That's the only thing you ever use it for is to spray Roundup. Do everything. Glasses, hat. Wear a mask. We all have masks now. Wear a mask. Do all of that. But even with all of that, I think you need to make your own decision whether to use this. As I say, it's government approved. It's on the shelves. It's everywhere. But I certainly, if you have any qualms about it at all, any doubts, any thoughts, I wouldn't use it. I think it's just, that's just my opinion.
Okay. Excellent. Let me see, 850-437-1620 if you'd like to text in a question. I have a couple coming in. I'm just, for some reason, they are taking a second to load. So if I don't get to them this week, I promise to get to them next week.
Well, you know what we need to follow up on and finish up is the remember the four things that our friend Daniel Leonard from Calhoun County said use for weed killers. One is just like the texter just said, glyphosate was one that he recommends. Then the 2,4-D, which is like the Trimec, which is a post-emergence liquid weed killer for your lawn. That's a real basic to have in your toolbox. The third one we haven't talked about today is Image. To have Image in your toolbox, which is good for sedge. Just a real quick background. There are basically three types of weeds in the world. Grassy weeds, crabgrass, we know that one. That's a good example. Broadleaf weeds, dollarweed, for example. And then there are the sedges. We all know sedges in Pensacola, we all call it nutgrass because that's what it is. It's got that little pecan-like looking root to it. But the way to be sure you know you have a sedge, Jenna, is to cut off the stalk. It's a very short, stubby little stalk, and run it between your thumb and forefinger. And the stem on every sedge is triangular. And if you do that, you can feel that it's a triangle. And that way, you have to know that it's a sedge. It's nut sedge. Most of us know how to identify it. And that 2,4-D is probably not going to get it. Image is labeled and has the active ingredients in order to control nut sedge. It is not easy. It is not easy. But that's the one product that Daniel Leonard says put into your toolbox for your weed killing. So he said put in the glyphosate, the 2,4-D, and put in the Image. And also he recommends, and I think this would be my last choice, I'm not sure I'd worry about this, is that over-the-top spray that we talked about earlier in the show, where a lot of the growers, if they have grassy weeds growing up in their plants, they'll spray it and it kills the grassy weeds but doesn't kill the plant. I'm not so sure that's one you need to have, but that's his number four. So those are the four types of weeds that he said put into your toolbox.
Okay, excellent. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, when we wrap up, let's talk some mothballs. Are you ready for that?
Mothballs.
Mothballs.
Let's do it.
I'm just throwing a curveball at you or a mothball at you. Oh.
A lot.
are wrapping up our time this morning on the Garden Line. You're listening to News Radio 92.3. Let's talk mothballs, and then hopefully we have time to wrap up with something I found on the internet. And I talked about it yesterday on the show. So our friend Sarah texted in and said that her neighbors are kind of scattering some mothballs around. Is there a benefit to your yard? I believe somebody in my neighborhood used to put them out to keep the rats and the rodents away. That's all I knew, Sarah.
I think I have heard people use mothballs to help inhibit mole cricket damage. If you see a run of a mole cricket, moles, if you will, and you just poke a hole and put a mothball in their run. I've heard people do that. Whether it works or not, debatable.
But it's going to be stinky.
Yeah, that's right.
It's going to be stinky.
No doubt about it.
Hey, next week, I want to run something by you about the 9 trees I found to boost your property value. So tune in next week to the Garden Line. I want to figure that out with you. All right, Mike?
I'll tune in. I will. I'll be here.